Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Sunday edition of the Be a Planner Show. It's the syndication math component, and we're going to be talking about several facets of the math metrics that help you analyze prospective transactions. Obviously, prospective would be the front end, and then we can use the same metrics to figure out performance as we go throughout the transaction. I'm joined today again by my associate, Dan Dubose. Dan, you're on the line, I believe.
I'm here. Good morning.
Very, very good. You're up and at 'em early there in Houston. I'm still overseas. For those of you that work with me, you're aware of that. In any event, I wanted to, I know we're going to talk about syndication math, et cetera, but I found something out after we talked yesterday, Dan, for you. We talked about the debt forgiveness, and, you know, I must have missed some of the fine print, and I've got a New York Post article. It's called, it was just 12 hours ago, so I guess maybe I did miss it. It happened right after the show, but Dan, you know, we talked about the size of the cost of this thing, and I think I said I'd read where it was, you know, really somewhere between $500 billion and $1 trillion, correct? And, you know, as it turns out, this effectively is almost like free education. Did you realize that the problem or the key that's buried in this, in the fine print? Let me find the statement here. Well, first of all, part one is horrifically unfair. That's where people took loans and didn't pay them back, thus costing the taxpayer north of $300 billion. But the rest of the idea that Biden's signed into law, at least temporarily, let's hope a court will undo this as being an unconstitutional use of the executive power. But he's wanting us to eat most of the future student debt as well. And I totally missed this. And I'm curious if you know what I'm referring to, Dan. Do you have any idea what the go-forward is for student loan borrowers now as a result of this executive action?
Well, over $1 trillion, I'd imagine.
Well, you're talking about the dollars. I'm talking about the concept. Get this. The executive action will roll back borrowers' maximum monthly payment on undergrad loans to just 5% of discretionary income. Think about that. Okay, on somebody that's gone to whatever private university you want to pick. And, of course, the universities are unconstrained. You know what their constraint is under the language of this executive order? Is that they'll do their best to provide value. Can you imagine? They're still rolling on the floor laughing at that requirement as if they've been doing it already. Right? I mean, beyond the liberal mishmash that doesn't allow people to make enough money to pay their loans back, right? But let's keep going. It gets better. Then he'll wipe out all remaining debt after just 10 years for many borrowers. Think about that. You rack up a huge debt. Your monthly payment's going to be limited to, is it your annual payment? Let me go back here. The maximum monthly payment is 5% of discretionary. That's in quotes in this article, so I'm not sure what that definition is. I'm assuming that's after your rent. That's after your light bill. It's after whatever
taxes,
else. I'm sure there's
after
some
taxes.
Well, I would think it would have to be now, wouldn't it? I would think that that would be a mandatory payment. And, of course, you got to eat. I get that. And so you're talking about a minuscule payment and on debt that there's no limit to effectively. And don't think the universities don't know that, okay? That's the reason we're in this mess to begin with, right? The when the government started chipping in by virtue of the loan process, that's when tuition and fees, et cetera, took off like a rocket. But anyway, so, you know, as one news site, I've never heard of this site, it's called Reasons, says the arrangement gives both universities and students an incentive to, quote, screw the taxpayers. Students wouldn't care how much they borrowed since they wouldn't have to pay back more than 5% of their discretionary income for 10 years, and then it just goes away. That's just crazy. That's just crazy. And I haven't seen that facet of this executive order discussed. But, boy, I think Pelosi, I'm beginning to tip my hat to Pelosi for calling it, when was it, about a year and a half ago, when she very clearly explained that the president did not have the authority or the power to forgive student loans. You remember that saying,
yeah.
Dan? I think she was a little bit miffed that they were moving on without her blessing.
Yeah.
But as this guy says that wrote this article, that, you know, let's see here. One possible way to contain the damage, cap tuition. Taxpayers would still wind up paying a fortune, but the system might not go haywire so quickly. Alas, Biden's plan Biden's plan barely pays lip service to this idea. Quote, colleges have a moral obligation to keep prices reasonable and ensure borrowers get value for their investments. That's all the White House says about this issue. And as this, the gentleman that wrote this article, what a knee slapper. As the fact sheet notes, inflation adjusted tuitions have tripled. Get this, Dan, have tripled over the past 40 years, and that's largely because of government aid. With Uncle Sam chipping in, the university simply jacked up prices. Anyway, that's amazing. This article, I guess, came out right after we had wrapped up the show yesterday, and what an unbelievable coup for those that are just getting ready to bite off a debt for going to college. Anyway, so that's, I guess, the only news item we'll talk about. I just had to get that in since we had just discussed what an expensive, and we were thinking it was $350 billion to maybe half a trillion, and clearly it goes well past that, and who knows what this turns into. I think it's a minimum of $1 trillion. Any comments on that, Dan?
It's got to be much more than $1 trillion when you. But it's not. I just can't imagine this happening totally, because it's just. How about the people that have already paid off their loans, Nathan?
Oh, it's just amazing. I mean, there's so many ways on so many different levels.
It's
that,
wrong.
These folks are trying to, you know, justify, and I don't blame the borrower. I mean, I guess you have to a point, but, you know, if the government is willing to give one group of people a break, who passes up free money, right? I mean, how many people took PPP loans, et cetera? Although the argument on that is, well, it went into payrolls that kept layoffs from occurring that basically salvaged, I forget how many millions of jobs. It's a little bit different than funds that are effectively the government's paying for new buildings, new gyms to work out in, new programs at the collegiate level. I mean, it's just a little bit different comparison. But I do understand why Biden specifically has trotted out the PPP loan program or grant, however you want to look at it, without doing the math on employment, et cetera. But anyway, well, let's do this, Dan. Let's take our first break. We'll be right back with a few minutes, and we will proceed with syndication math. We'll be right back.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. But I hope that you tell me, well done, my child. You've won your reward through your sacrifice. Your sacrifice.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
Catch Chris X Radio weekdays at 4, right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Joe Biden gave his first primetime speech in months. While standing in front of blood-red lighting and being flanked by U.S. Marines, he called for unity while saying MAGA Republicans are extremists and a threat to democracy. I'm not saying he went full Adolf Hitler, but maybe just semi-Hitler.
Chris X Radio, weekdays 4 till 6, right here on The Voice of Texas.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose. And before we get started on some syndication math, I want to just mention our normal disclaimer that just because you listen to the show today, you find us on a website, you send us an email, or otherwise connect with us, that action in and of itself does not make you a client of Nathan Ross or Dan DuBose or assorted affiliates that we have. And it's only once we engage with some sort of engagement letter or invoice that you pay, etc., that you become a client. So as with everything you hear on the radio, read online, read in a book, etc., please check with your current advisors that know your facts and circumstances to make sure that whatever you're getting ready to attempt is a fit and won't get you into more trouble than if you just put your head down and move on. In any event, Dan, do you want to talk about the transaction you reviewed this week, or do you want me to discuss some of the math metrics on in general, how we assess these transactions? What would your preference be?
I think it's good to have a lead in how we assess, because we do have some interesting numbers on this one little project we have here to look at.
Okay. Well, let's do that then. Let's talk about the three major tools that most investors, and even I would suggest the syndicators, obviously are very savvy to the fact that investors are focused primarily on three different measures to analyze syndications. And I'm going to suggest, before we identify those and explain what they are, while all three should be considered, they all have a role, there's not one of them that is best, generally speaking. It depends on your view, depends on when you might want to start living off of the cash flows that come off these investments. It may depend on your ability to reinvest the funds fairly quickly, meaning that, you know, you might get a distribution of half the money that you put in for the original investment. Let's say that might happen in year two. We see transactions that indicate that that's their target. Is it enough money coming out to you at that point that you would be able to reinvest it? Or is it simply going to sit in your bank account waiting for another 50 grand or whatever it is that you intend to invest, you know, the incremental amount? So there's several perspectives, but again, there are three major metrics. One is the internal rate of return, or what you'll hear referred to or see in writing as the IRR, internal rate of return. And then secondly, we have the equity multiple, which is generally denoted with, I guess, not really an acronym, it's an abbreviation, EM, and it's typically uppercase E, uppercase M, and a little X. So equity multiple. And then lastly, COC is the cash on cash return. And there will be some assorted others. I see the annualized average return. I see ROI. I don't know. I mean, Dan, there's assorted other metrics. Can you think of any right offhand that we pay attention to besides the big three, or really the ones that we tend to dwell on?
Well, those are enough to get you interested in a project most of the time. So it's are not interested, as the case may be.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, we're not, even if we, like Dan says, get interested or not get interested, we're still probably going to look at it a little more before we decide to totally go all in, or to nix it and move on to another. I mean, there's a lot of intangibles that the math doesn't necessarily address. And you may see, for instance, the location of a property being a significant forecast of success. I certainly do. I like buying properties that are what I would refer to as trophy properties. They're in the right spot. They're in an area that's become, well, like I've got properties in San Antonio that are down in the Southtown area. It's the cool place to be. If it was San Diego, it would be the Gas Lamp Quarter. You may be familiar with that, or Atlanta, I think Central Highlands, or I don't know, every major city in America has, you know, a spot that is just special. You know, River Oaks, Montrose, and Houston would fit that bill.
Hi.
And so, I'm sorry. Say again.
The Heights in Houston.
Yeah, there you go. The Heights. You know, Turtle Creek in Dallas. I mean, there's a number of these spots that you can't hardly miss locationally. And I know one of the transactions that I invested in, and I've also had the syndicator on our show before. It's Macan Investments with Medina Sheikh. You know, he led a transaction there on Memorial Parkway headed into downtown where the land value itself was worth 80% of the acquisition. Well, that is highly unusual that you'll get that sort of opportunity, and that gives you significant downside risk. It may also tilt your financial performance a little bit, right? Not necessarily the way that you would like in terms of interim cash flows, but boy, wait till the end. See how much that land has increased and see how much that's going to be reflected in the sales price, even if it's not in the cash flows or the net operating income. So there's intangibles that you are going to look at, and it goes well past location. It also could be, you know, just the personality of the team, the syndicator, the fact that they've been to the finish line more than a few times before. In my mind, that is a huge point that you want to understand is, you know, let's hope this isn't the first rodeo for this cowboy or cowgirl, as the case may be, and that they know what to do at the right time with the right resources. And that's easier said than done in many cases. But in any event, so back to the three metrics, the first being the internal rate of return, or IRR, and the IRR includes both cash flow from operations and it includes cash flow from sale. And I guess the from operations would include refinances. It clearly includes cash flow from refinances. And it's not just that those items are included, it's the timing of those options. And, you know, if you look at a 7-year out forecast, and just to illustrate how the IRR works, the sooner you get cash on a transaction that you're analyzing the IRR on, you're going to find that it's a higher percent. It is explained as a percentage. And I've got a chart here somewhere that I'm going to put my hands on. Let's see. Here it is. And so take a 10-year transaction. This is just a very simple illustration, and I believe you can see it in your head, so to speak. You don't have to have a spreadsheet up. Let's assume that in year one, we put at the very beginning, we put $100,000 into a transaction. And in year one, we have zero distributions. Year two, we have $150,000. In distributions, including the 100 coming out, I believe it's included there. And effectively, that would generate a high IRR of 22.5%. Let's move on to year three, and then nothing after that. So on that scenario where we got 150,000 back in year two, that's it. And there's no year three, year four, etc. Conversely, let's look at the next example where we get nothing in year one and nothing in year two, but we get $150,000 in year three. That's a 14.5% internal rate of return. And we could go on out to year 10, and in that scenario, where year 10 is when we get the 150 back, so we've got zero for years 1, 2, 3, 4, etc., out to 10, that generates a 4.1% IRR. And so it doesn't look good if you don't have a smoothing effect on the distributions. And you might compare that 4.1% IRR with one of the other metrics that we're going to talk about, one of the other two, and you're going to realize, well, 4.1 is a low internal rate of return, but maybe that transaction, if we look at it using the EMX or the equity multiple, it might be a good equity multiple. I'm going to look at that chart here in a minute with you. But in any event, IRR is something that we want to consider. I would tell you it matters most when, and this is just an opinion, there's no right or wrong. And in fact, I would tell you that internal rate of return, if you ask three syndicators to calculate it for the same facts, you're probably going to get three different answers, and all of them are right and all of them are wrong. There's a couple of assumption sets and the ways that they might choose to enter the variables on that calculation. But You should always look at it, but I personally don't put as much stock in the internal rate of return as I do equity multiple, as an example, because I'm not focused on how much cash flow this year, whereas you may be in a situation where you're older than I, you need the cash, or you need to understand what the projected cash flow is each year. And so you're probably going to focus on one of the other metrics, which is the cash on cash return. But in any event, Dan, let's go ahead and take our second break, and then we're going to come back and continue this discussion. We'll go into the equity multiple next using the same $100,000 investment. We'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross and Dan Dubose, CPAs.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just getting started with real estate private partnership syndications, you can now take advantage of direct online investing options. Tune in Sundays at 7 a.m. to the Be a Planner Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, right here on KSEV.
Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't. Feeling good was easy, love, when he sang the blues. You know, feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and my Bobby, yeah.
Let's pick back up with the three major math metrics that we use to look at the returns on investments. And again, the first one we discussed was the internal rate of return. I'm going to tell you it's a confusing metric for most of my lay type clients, you know, laymen that don't work in this arena every day, day in, day out. And I would suggest to you that either of the latter two become a little bit more easy to understand and calculate. And I guess, you know, before I discuss either or both of those two, I should mention that one of the key reasons to understand these metrics and understand the targets, and especially the IRR metric that I'm telling you is probably the harder of the three to understand, is that when you look at the syndication doc stack or document stack that involves private placement memorandums and operating agreements, you're going to see enhanced promotes that occur once a syndicator achieves a certain internal rate of return. And an example of that is, I don't know, I wouldn't say all projects, but certainly a lot of them these days will have a 80-20 or 70-30 split between the passive investor and the syndicator or the management team. So this passive investor is getting 70% of the distribution. The syndicator is getting 30%, or 80 and 20, however you might see in the deals that you're looking at. And that's not to say there's some, you know, there are some other hurdles at times that get applied or overlaid here. Like, for instance, there may be a preferable distribution, a pref, we call it, where you get, as a passive, you might get 7% on your money before the syndicator gets anything in that split that I mentioned. But let's just set that to the side for a moment. Let's talk about where the passive and the syndicator are splitting from the first dollar. And once they get you to a certain IRR, say 12%, or we see as high as 15 or 16%, then the promote, the split, will scale up, because at that point the syndicator feels like, hey, we've done in large measure what you paid us to do. And that's arguable, in that, you know, they're also getting assorted fees, et cetera. But let's set that to the side, because that'll just get my blood pressure up, and we don't need to be doing that at this time. Right, Dan?
Yeah.
So, and you know I'm right, correct, Dan? There's a reason to get excited. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, bottom line is that promote, that split, will then scale up to maybe 60-40. Or 50-50, and I don't think I've seen it go past the halfway point, but hey, none of this existed a year and a half ago, so give it another month, maybe another year, and I'm sure, and I'm actually one that would argue that they should get an exorbitant percentage after they've gotten you your money back, plus the profits that was projected way back in the beginning that convinced you to reach into your bank account and send them the money. And I am done trying to find investments, or I'm not done. I'm continuing to pursue them, but I'm done looking at investments where I feel like it's simply a case where you, the passive investor, or we, the passive investor, is looking to let the syndicator take all the fees, all the cash flow that they are trying to get out of a deal. And then we wait around for the crumbs at the end, where they've gotten all the assorted fees, the acquisition fee, the due diligence fee, the capital raise fee, the debt placement fee, the construction management fees, the disposition or refinance fees. It's crazy how much money goes to the syndicator before you get any measure of return. And so, you know, the concept of waiting for the crumbs is something that if I'm you, I'm not going to accept. I want to see money that's timed. I want my interest. When you talk about, and I see this almost every transaction we look at, how it's investor friendly, or we put the investors first. And yet every time I look at another distribution or another fee, I don't see where it's going to the investor. I see where it's going to the syndicator, and that's something that we will definitely call out when we see it. But in any event, going back to the equity multiple, the equity multiple is very easy to calculate. It's simply taking the amount of money that you put in, and then you add up all the distributions that's coming your way throughout the entire transaction. And they're targeted. Unless you've already finished this transaction, you won't know what that number is, right? So in any event, we understand that this information is pro forma. We also understand that if you dilute our capital enough by taking fees, Mr. and Ms. Syndicator, that the odds go down. They don't go up that we're going to achieve the math metrics. They go down. And that's what we're looking at when we talk to you about, hey, why don't we realign the interest of the passive to be in line with the syndicator. But anyway, with regard to the equity multiple, you know, is, what's interesting is if you take the $100,000 investment, and let's say in year two you get the $150,000, just like we did in the IRR example, our equity multiple is 1.50. That means, you know, you got $150,000 in distributions, divide the amount of the investment into it. That's the simplicity of this calculation. It's 1.5. And guess what it is if we go all the way to the last option where we took the 150, we got the 150 in the year of sale, year 10. So we put 100 in, we got 150 out. It's still 1.50. That's the simplicity of the equity multiple. Now, you might argue, as the syndicator would, well, the 4.1 IRR is the same scenario. So, you know, the fact that you're getting what appears to be a high equity multiple, it's not, because it's paid out over 10 years, but it's just like in if it were paid in year three, that wouldn't be a bad equity multiple. It wouldn't be exactly what we're seeking, but it wouldn't be bad. And so I guess what I'm trying to explain with these two metrics, both of these two, the timeline is critical. And in our case, as you know, if you've listened to the show, we suggest an equity multiple of 2.0. That's where your money doubles. Put 100 in, get 200 out. Should occur somewhere between the 3 and 4 year mark. 3.6 years is the actual number, and in any event, you know, that the gold standard as I see it. Double your money every 3.6 years. That's 20% compounded ROI. There's another metric which I think is mine alone. I don't see anybody using that one. You see anybody using that one, Dan? Should I go trademark that thing?
I like it.
Right, and. Yeah, well, I mean, it's essentially what it sounds like. I find that to be a little bit easier to get your hands around conceptually than, you know, IRR. And I think it's actually more like the IRR, perchance. Although, again, we don't put I don't put a timeline on compounded ROI. I simply recognize the fact that your money doesn't show up incrementally, typically, on most of these projects. Your NOI is going up while you're asleep at night, and you may not recognize that NOI bump until you refinance in year 3 or 4, or you sell it in year 8. Well, it doesn't just show up in year 8. I mean, it's been ratably accrued, and that's how I effectively got to the what I call the compounded ROI. Okay, the last metric is cash-on-cash return, which that's also fairly easy. It's simply the amount of money that you're going to get out each year. Let's say you invest $100,000 and, you know, the syndicator says, well, we project an 8% cash-on-cash return. Now, unless that's an annualized average return, meaning this is for year one, it's going to be 8%, or maybe it's going to be 7.5%. In year two, it's going to be 8.5%. In year three, it's going to be 8%. Well, that average is 8%. That would be the annualized average return versus this year it's going to be X. Let's call it 8% in year one. So that would mean that you would get $8,000 out for year one. And if you're on, if you're living off your retirement funds, if this is retirement money we're talking about, which in most of our clients' cases it is, that's what you want to focus on. You don't want to know what you're going to get in year 10. Well, you might want to know what the amount's going to be in year 10, but you're not counting on waiting to year 10, whereas someone that's younger might be fine with waiting till the 10th year to finish executing on the plan. So anyway, I think that once you dig in on these three math metrics, it'll probably help you a bit towards understanding, again, the goal here on every deal that you look at or we look at with you is, what are we signing up for? We want to make sure we understand exactly what we're signing up for. You may want to sign up for something that's different than what I or Dan might care to sign up for, okay? So there's not as much right or wrong as there is it a good fit? And we would look at the math, or I believe, Dan, you would agree, we suggest looking at the math before you spend the time looking at the personalities involved, et cetera, because if the math isn't good, there's usually not a lot of personality that's going to change it. It's like one of our favorite syndicators. We like this syndicator, Lane Bean, pilot-legacy.com, 28-year, 29-year fighter pilot in the Air Force, and he's got the flyovers in his syndication videos and his website to prove it. And I remember once when I was talking to Lane early on, I looked at those flyovers and I thought, you know, one of those would have been adequate. And so when I had him on the phone the first time, I couldn't help but mention, you know, hey, you know, enough with the flyovers. We get it and we love you. And he chuckled, and you tell he'd had this mentioned to him before, and he said, oh, you don't think those flyovers add anything to your NOI? And I had to admit that was a pretty good comeback. But yeah, we want someone that is been shot at, and I guess in his case it was literally, and knows what to do when the crap hits the fan. Because let me tell you, that's where we're at right now with regard to the current facts and circumstances, potentially. And that's something. There is a news article on that topic that I don't think we're going to have time for today, but I'll bring it up next week. And it's got some analysis that I have to admit I hadn't really contemplated with respect to the Treasury easing the quantitative easing the quantitative did I say that wrong, Dan? It's the program's quantitative easing, correct?
Yes.
So they're shutting the spigot off is the bottom line, and there's an impact on the market and the bond market that is like two airliners crashing head on effectively. And there's a lot of concern amongst some economists, and I have to acknowledge this article that I read, I hadn't really thought through that, and it's near term. I think they're projecting the end of the year if the Fed continues on the path that it's on. But anyway, we'll talk about that next week. Let's go ahead and take another break, and when we get back, Dan, we'll have 10 minutes or so to talk about that. I believe it's a Kansas City transaction, if I recall correctly. So we'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna warm it up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
Catch Chris X Radio weekdays at 4, right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Joe Biden gave his first primetime speech in months. While standing in front of blood-red lighting and being flanked by U.S. Marines, he called for unity while saying MAGA Republicans are extremists and a threat to democracy. I'm not saying he went full Adolf Hitler, but maybe just semi-Hitler.
Chris X Radio, weekdays 4 till 6, right here on The Voice of Texas.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and big dreams. And there are many just like me with big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose. So, Dan, let's pivot and take a look at the, let's see, it's a 506B transaction, so we're not going to be talking about it in any level of detail. And, in fact, we don't have the doc stack, but we've got a very well put together webinar. Slide deck. So I'm going to let you run with it, Dan.
Yeah, Kansas City, as you mentioned, is it's an happening place these days. It seems, according to the write-up that we have on this particular project, it's Kansas City areas had big investment by the big tech guys, Google, Meta, Facebook. Looking at, $600 million, $800 million worth of investment in the area. So it's kind of got the real estate investors intrigued, it seems. And this particular project is an older project, 1968 built. It's 95 units, comes under the small apartments that we've talked about a little bit. It's really quite a neat looking little project for the age. It's been well maintained, it appears. But there's a lot of work gone into doing as we just talked about, the cash on cash, the IRR, the EMX on this particular project. Looks like it's got it fits almost within our guidelines that we like to look at as far as the doubling your money. In this case, about a 5-year period is what they're projecting. It's in such an area that is going to be up and coming. It's near the University of Kansas, I think is what one of the articles I read, or some of the detail I read. Got a beginning cash flow in year two, has nothing in year one. So the the IRR is right at, in this case, they're projecting 14, almost 15%. Because it does get cash flow starting in year two, with a sale or refinance expected in year five. So it's, on the surface, without all the detail we have yet to get into the docs, the documents, it's enticing. It looks like it'd be a fun one to be in, or a good one to be in economically as well. It's got, preferred return at 7% annually starting in year two. It does have two classes, the Class A, Class B, and that depends in this case on dollars invested for the most part. Takes a minimum of $50,000 or a minimum of $250,000 if you want to be in a Class B, which you get a little higher return on the annual basis. It is intriguing, though. It's a good one to look at for somebody that's considering getting into a multifamily investment.
A couple of comments that I guess I'll play devil's advocate here. First of all, I believe it's the KU Medical Center area. I'm not sure how close the rest of the university is, I guess, for any of you Jayhawk fans.
Yeah, Medical Center. Yeah, it sounds like it's almost like a mini Houston kind of in that area.
Well,
is that a big investment?
It's got, there's a new airport coming next spring. It's like the eighth hottest job market, according to a Wall Street Journal and Moody Analytics report. It's one of the rising stars for cities or metros with tech talent, and that's in part, I assume, because of the broadband. They've got apparently one of the nation's, 5.5 million miles of fiber has been deployed in the Kansas City area. It's the first gigabyte region and the most connected metro in the U.S. So that's obviously driving a lot of its growth.
There were some people that call it the Silicon Prairie, because you got Google and Facebook coming in there big.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, according to the Lonely Planet, the best city in the U.S. for remote work. That was a 2021 distinction. A few negatives. There's three sponsors involved in this thing. Now, this is not a big project. I mean, how do you assess that, Dan? Or do you?
I think you would, and I'm not sure exactly what you're asking, except these are all youngins, they look like. Some really young guys. How many times have they been down the street? Have they,
the deal? That's a good point. They've done, I think between them, they've been involved in 1,000 units, and I think most of them are these smallish properties. This is 95 units, and again, as you mentioned, we're starting to look at more and more of those. It is a value add, and if I'm not mistaken, this transaction shows a value increase. Do you have that number handy? They bought it for about, or they're going to buy it for $7.7 million. I don't think that includes the rehab. And I've forgotten that number. I looked at it the other day. Do you have that number handy?
I don't have it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, it's not an insignificant amount of money. So I get it in terms of them being able to do, some rental growth. It says, looking at the renovation, I still don't have a number, but approximately 4 to 6 units per month. Renovations are largely cosmetic, flooring, paint, lighting, kitchen and bathroom upgrades, etc. Those are interior, exterior, sliding doors, pool upgrades, laundry areas, laundry room upgrades, common area. So,
It does show $1.7 million capital expenditures, I see here.
So that's what, about $4,600 a door, if I'm doing the math right?
Too early for that.
Or wait a minute. That maybe. Well, how much do you say, Dan? I'm sorry.
$1.7 million.
Well, okay. It's nowhere near as much as I was thinking then. Divided by 95, that's about, it is, 17,000. So that's a fairly significant upgrade. So back to, and we're going to have to hurry, I've just got a minute here. So all in, it's about $9,985,000. So $10 million, and let's see, they're going to sell it. What are they saying they're going to sell this thing for? I had it. Well, let's just say it's, I think, almost double the acquisition price, and that's where I was headed. I'm not sure they're going to get there on that, but in any event, equity multiple is okay. It's not great. It's 1.95 over 5 years. Cash on the IRR, as Dan said, is 14.6. Annualized returns 19%. So, you know, it's decent, but it's 95 units. Not much scale and not much room for a slip. But anyway, well, we're at the end of the show. I wish we had a few more minutes, and maybe we'll pick up with this one next week. But for those of you that have tuned in today, thank you. And we'll be back this coming Saturday at 5 p.m. with more of the Tax Mash Show. And I'm sure there'll be more news that will be timely given what's going on in Washington. We'll pick up with some of that as well. Dan, thanks for your help today. And
thank you, Nathan.
Look forward to having you back next week.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.